Cheers. 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 Cheers.
Cheers, babe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 247 of the Fun with Cars Formula One podcast. I'm Robin Warner, and today I'm joined by the man some call the Abu Dhabi Anorak, Chris Roche. Hey, Chris.
Hello, Robin. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. You might notice that the recording quality is a little different than usual. It's a little bit noisier than usual, and that's because Chris and I are actually in one place, sitting together at one table sharing a drink. That was a legit cheers.
Cheers again.
And we're covering the final round of the Formula One Championship in a pub, I believe the English call it. We'd call it a bar. But today we are going to talk about the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, which was the 21st round of the Formula One Championship and the final round of the Formula One Championship. For full schedules of all four series, go to funwithcars.com/schedules. In the background, you'll be hearing another announcer about another sport. We're not going to worry about that, but if you happen to catch a word of that, that is football. It is Sunday afternoon, December 9th, and here are the results of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Wouldn't you know it, it was Lewis Hamilton that won the race. I believe that made it 11 for the year in the leading Mercedes. He was followed by Sebastian Vettel in the leading Ferrari in second. Max Verstappen in the leading Red Bull racing car was third, followed by his teammate Daniel Ricciardo in the second Red Bull. Valtteri Bottas was in fifth, the second Mercedes, and Carlos Sainz was sixth place in the second Renault. Jean Leclerc was 7th in the Sauber Ferrari, and that Sauber part is going to be leaving very soon when we talk about Leclerc. He was followed by Sergio Perez in the leading Force India. Romain Grosjean was in the leading Haas Ferrari in 9th, and his teammate Kevin Magnussen in the second Haas was 10th, 11th place, and the final result for the man, at least for now. Fernando Alonso was 11th in the leading McLaren Renault. He was followed by Brendan Hartley in the leading Scuderia Toro Rosso in 12th. 13th went to Lance Stroll in the leading Williams. 14th went to Stoffel Van Dorn in the second McLaren. 15th, and I believe this is Stoffel's last event before it's Formula E instead of Formula 1. 15th went to Sergei Sorokin in the second Williams. And I don't know where he's going or if he's going anywhere. 16th through 20th were not classified, and that was Pierre Gasly in the second Scuderia Toro Rosso, Esteban Ocon in the Force India, Marcus Ericsson in the Sauber Ferrari, and he's IndyCar bound, by the way, Kimi Raikkonen in the Ferrari, who is Sauber bound, and Nico Hülkenberg, that's Hülkenberg, in the Renault, and he left in style. There's no two ways about that. So anyway, Chris, what did you think? Oh, and I think Chris is happy that our poutine just arrived.
Fantastic.
We're doing a recording. We're doing a podcast. So thank you very much. Oh, that does look very Welsh. If I were to guess what Welsh food looked like.
It's Welsh.
What is that?
It looks Canadian to me.
Maybe. Yeah, it looks French-Canadian.
This is a Jacques Villeneuve specialty.
Right. Not many people know this, but he's also a successful chef.
As successful as he is a musician.
Right.
I've never actually listened to a Jacques Villeneuve album, have you?
I listened to part of one song. Does that count?
Well, it's more than I've ever listened to. It was bad then, was it?
It wasn't great.
Okay, good.
So anyway, the Formula One race, Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, Lewis Hamilton wins his 11th win. It really, that win meant very little on its own, more than it was just kind of a statement of...
Statement of his sixth championship for next season, isn't
it? I think Kimi Raikkonen is going to have something to say about that in the Sauber. That's what I think.
So, I think there were some winners and losers in that race. Obviously, Lewis was one of them. Bottas was a loser, for sure. He lost his position in the championship, dropped down to fifth, didn't win a race this season.
Yeah, that's right.
In the championship-winning car. He had severe braking issues. I mean, it looked like he'd forgotten how to brake at one point during the race. It was sort of a good summary of his season as a whole, really.
Just well, Chris, elaborate so that I can get a good couple bites of poutine.
Yeah, yeah. Robin's sort of lost focus on the pod here, ladies and gentlemen, for a moment.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have immense focus.
But there was some good racing. I quite enjoyed watching Stoffel Vandoorne in action. I think it's the first time I can remember seeing him doing anything in a Grand Prix.
Well, he finally realized that he had nothing to lose and started driving the way. Yeah, we're doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, it was. But the statistic that caught my eye was that he was out-qualified 21-0 over the course of the season.
That's amazing.
And that's how you lose your F1 drive, ladies and gentlemen.
If you were ever curious.
This is a bit too healthy. There's vegetables in here.
This is, what it was, shepherd's pie poutine, I believe, was it called?
Is that what it is? That's the full description.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a French-Canadian dish that has been, I want to say Anglified, but that doesn't seem quite right. So what would be the, it's Welsh-ish, but what would you call it? Celtic-ified?
If you want. Is it good? It does look like shepherd's pie, you're right. Have you ever eaten shepherd's pie?
I have had, yeah. I'd say it's shepherd's pie with French fries and cheese curds, which suits me fine.
A chunk of cheese, then.
Yeah, so yeah, there were some winners and losers. To me, the first one was Nico Hülkenberg.
What, do you think the barrel roll into the barriers wasn't what he intended to do on the opening Grand Prix?
Well,
it's a good old crash, that was.
If Flavio Briatore were still involved with Renault, I would be more... I'd be more inclined to think it was on purpose, but... The question that... I have to say that... It did largely look like a racing incident to me. Although, if you had to blame anyone, I would actually blame Nico for the incident.
Okay. A little harsh, but...
Well, like I said, I would call it a racing incident. To me, it was a 60-40 type of thing. But I would put 60 on Nico.
But most of the interest appeared to be in the extrication of Nico from his burning...
Exactly right.
...inverted Renault. And with, of course, the hands device, what do we call it? Halo device.
Yes.
Making it a little bit more tricky. It did take a while to get him out. And they didn't appear to have any sort of heavy lifting equipment to help the marshals to ride the vehicle either. So they were just
at one point, I think they ended up just flipping it over. Mm-hmm. But at one point prior, Nico was starting to get quite concerned about there being a fire in the car.
Yeah. And rightly so. It was on fire. And he was upside down, hanging like a, was it pregnant cow or something?
I don't know how pregnant cows hang, if I'll be honest. Not a veterinarian.
But he wasn't a happy boy, was he?
No. And I have definitely seen drivers get out of inverted cars before. Never equipped with a halo. People immediately said, no, it wasn't the halo's fault. Halo had nothing to do with it. But I'm less certain of that. What do you think?
No, clearly he would have been able to get out of the car without the halo in place. But I don't think there was any real danger of him becoming baited Alaska Hülkenberg, was there? I mean, it was plenty of marshals, plenty of fire extinguishers. The fire was out. Modern Formula One cars don't burn like they used to, thankfully. So I don't think there was any great danger. But it was interesting to see how long it took to extricate him. Obviously, they're concerned about back injuries. But he was back in the post-season test, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he was fine. But.
And the accident itself was low speed. If the halo, if it did anything, it clearly added a little extra protection when the car was flipped over, although... A pre-halo car would have been fine as well.
Yeah, I think the debate about the halos coming on, isn't it? I think we all got used to how they changed the looks of the car. It's clearly safer. Let's just move on.
Got used to, yes. Enjoy, absolutely not. But yes, I'll concede that I am now used to it. I still think that it's worth adding that we shouldn't say, you'll appreciate this, Chris, that the halo is a done and dusted procedure for protecting I think that we should still keep an eye on future better ways of protecting the driver from inanimate objects that can go rogue on the track, but to want to throw it out because of one incident will invariably mean that the next incident would have helped the halo would have helped the driver. So
it's proliferating, isn't it? I mean, it's going to, is IndyCar adopting it for next season?
IndyCar is looking at a windscreen option, so something similar.
But what is the 19 car going to have?
I think the 19 car is going to have a windscreen.
Yeah. Okay. Because I know they tested something earlier in the season, but did they actually...
As far as I knew, it was moving ahead, and now it could be that it will be 2021.
Okay. But I saw the new F3 car's got a halo. I think F2 ran with it this season, right?
Yeah.
So it's proliferating throughout the formula, so...
Yeah, and, you know, there was Hans device controversy... whenever that was, 15 years ago. And that's obviously all part of the past now. Yeah. I own a Hans device myself, as an example. But, so I think there's a good chance we'll go that way. And, as you said, the most important thing is Nico Hülkenberg is fine. And he'll be ready to have Daniel Ricciardo as a teammate, and I'm quite looking forward to that. What else about the race itself caught your eye?
So I thought the Red Bulls were feisty. Max settled his score during the course of the race with a rather robust move down the inside of our friend Mr. Ocon. It was either move out of the way or I am going to crash into you. Seemed to be the approach. They all made, as I said, Bottas look rather pedestrian. I thought...
I have to... Let's talk about that a minute. This was a really unfortunate race for Bottas because he really did look just behind the curve. You know, here he is... in the championship-winning car with his teammate winning the race pretty comfortably. And he's struggling and losing every fight he gets into and ends up 30 seconds behind the fourth-place finisher. And
well, he did an extra stop, didn't he? They brought him in. When he lost all the positions, they brought him in for tire change.
Right, because it was a free stop at that point. But... you know, still the point could have and should have been he gained that pace back because he had so much more speed, and even then he didn't.
No, it wasn't a great end to a pretty bad season for Valtteri. I guess the question is, do we think that he can do any better next year? I mean, if he'd had a little bit more luck at the start of the season, let's say if he'd won Azerbaijan, for example, which he should have done, really. I mean, that was...
That was just bad luck.
That race win was taken away from him through no fault of his own.
For anyone that doesn't remember, he had the tire burst on him.
With two laps to go, right?
Yeah, two laps to go. And
handed the win to Hamilton.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of truth to be said about momentum during a Formula One season. And he didn't seem to get much. And then, you know, Hamilton, as the season wore on, just got stronger and stronger. So you wonder if things had gone his way a little bit earlier in the season, whether or not he could have at least got better place in the championship. But there was too many anonymous weekends, too many weekends where he was blown away by Hamilton and it was nowhere, really, in quali or the race. So
absolutely.
He's got to lift his game next season or he's gonna lose his drive. So Mercedes have announced Ocon as their reserve driver, right?
That's right.
So that's basically saying, you know, we got a pretty good guy who can step in if we feel it's necessary, right, to lift the team performance.
And really, if you think about it, for Ocon, that's really not a bad place to land. Felipe Massa was a Ferrari reserve driver for a season after having, I think it was his rookie season in 02 with Sauber, and then he was reserve driver for a year before he jumped in Ferrari.
Yep.
And that put him to within inches of the championship in 08. So, you know, that was obviously a great move for him. That's where he got all his race wins, all these kind of things. And it's because he took that year off and was disciplined and learned how the team operated. So,
yeah.
Not saying that's definite for Ocon, but there's potential for Ocon in that way.
And, you know, if Bottas loses his Mercedes seat, you know, who would pick him up?
We're jumping the gun,
But the point is that next season's going to be huge for him.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot go through another season without winning a race. Not in that car. It's just not acceptable. So he's going to have to really go away and do a sort of Nico Rosberg-style reinvention. Come back with a different mindset, right? Try and maybe be a little less amicable with Hamilton. Try and get under his skin a little bit. Try and unsettle him. And start to really try and outperform him, because otherwise he's going to be gone.
Well, I don't even think it requires that much. His rookie season, he had, I believe, 2 wins. He won in Russia.
His rookie season for Mercedes.
With Mercedes, yeah, okay. Excuse me. Yeah, he won it. He won the Russian Grand Prix, and it was one other, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And he showed pace while still being amicable, so...
Yeah, he had a better first season than second season.
Yeah.
So, the other interesting thing that happened in Abu Dhabi was the culmination of the Renault-Red Bull relationship. So, there's some interesting stats here. So, they had 14 seasons together. They won 59 races, 8 titles, obviously 4 constructors and 4 Sebastian Vettel Drivers' Championships. I'm good, thanks. Yeah.
This is Chris Roche turning down Shepherd's Pie Poutine, everyone.
It was good. I would have it if you ever come to Conor O'Neill's in Ann Arbor. But obviously they haven't even been branded. You know, they've had no branding on the car for the last couple of seasons.
Exactly, right. It's not Heuer. A Renault. It's a Tag Heuer, exactly.
But, you know, it was quite a relationship, quite a partnership for quite a long time. And now they're going their own separate ways. And you wonder, you know, Renault managed to secure 4th place in the championship. They're certainly on an upward curve. And now with a Honda in the back of the Red Bull, we might see them battling out on the track a bit more frequently next season, potentially. You know, we did see that at the start of this year. I think in Azerbaijan again, there was a good, certainly early laps battle between the Renaults and the Red Bulls. And now with Daniel behind the wheel, we might see a bit more feistiness next season between those two teams, which would be fun, I think. Definitely fun.
What do you think about Daniel being Nico? Nico seems to be a very smooth driver, but always seems to kind of fly under the radar. Never really seems to have that outward pizzazz, but... When push comes to shove, he is shockingly quick.
He is a quick driver, yeah, but I think Daniel put him away pretty comfortably, honestly. Daniel is top draw. I think he's definitely in my top 3-4 drivers in current Formula 1. So I would put him comfortably ahead of Hülkenberg. So I'd be surprised if he didn't certainly...
We're going to have a, before this episode's over, a top 5, bottom 5 ranking of drivers.
Yeah, I was momentarily surprised there because I thought Robin needed another drink urgently and seemed to be flagging down anyone who was passing us by.
It's the final season. We're at a pub. Why hold back?
I did enjoy the donuts at the end of the race, I have to say.
Well, that
the formation donuts were great, especially pulling Alonso into the front.
Well, you know, Alonso... I appreciate that he kind of just took the moment and grabbed it. And there was a debate in my office at work about whether Alonso should be considered one of the greats. And the answer is absolutely, of course, 100%.
I thought that had been, you know, just because he's had a tough car for the last 3 seasons, it doesn't diminish what he's done.
And that's absolutely right. And the non-believers were convinced because the believers were so adamant. I mean, this is a guy that took on Michael Schumacher in his prime and beat him.
And beat him, Definitely.
And especially in 05, he just showed immense pace and fortitude, mental fortitude, to be able to hold him off. And he's been in fast cars and weak cars and very weak cars, and he's shown incredible pace every time. His downfall, and this is a real weakness, and this is why he's not a 5-plus time champion, is his relationship with teams.
Yeah. He's got a real problem there, for sure.
Take a look back at his time with McLaren.
Yeah.
This was when McLaren had the top car, or one of the top threes at the very least. Going very well. Can I have a...
Right?
Yeah, another gin and tonic, please. Tangray and tonic.
I'll take a...
Hold that. That's very important.
Give us two. Thanks.
Yeah, I think we've outlasted our first server, perhaps.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah. We've worn him out.
So, he left McLaren when it was a top team to go to Renault when it was strong but still in the mid-pack arena.
Oh, well, hang on. We got to explore that a little bit more. So he went to McLaren, and it was a top team.
Yeah, left Renault to go to McLaren.
He threw his toys out of the pram because Hamilton wasn't subservient to him.
Exactly right. Right, yep.
And so then, pulled the nuclear option, imploding McLaren's season, costing them the constructors' title that season, and resulting in such a disharmony.
Well, and the driver's title, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they sort of fumbled over each other, didn't they, at the end there? And, the ramifications from what he did that year went on at McLaren for multiple years and probably cost Ron Dennis, because he had to take a sabbatical based off of that. Dennis had to leave. He couldn't be involved in the F1 team for a number of seasons. Based on all of the...
Yeah, that's right. That was the Martin Whitmarsh era.
Yeah. So, that was where it all started. And then he went off to Ferrari, and it wasn't much better there, where he was often at loggerheads with the team management until they didn't really want him anymore. And that was the problem. He became sort of viewed as immensely talented, immensely capable, incredible racing driver that was just very, very, very hard to deal with. And that would, make any sort of team relationship very, very difficult.
Yeah, he was kind of toxic in that way.
Yeah. So, I think Christian Horner has never wanted him in his team based on just the reputation alone, which is, astonishing.
It's telling. Yeah, and, so he had his time at Renault, where it was fine, but that's because Flavio Briatore, gave him demigod status pretty much. And then at McLaren, he was probably kind of receiving that again, but that's what allowed him to be qualifying 11th or 12th instead of 15th or 16th. I mean, that's not what we were looking for. So...
But I think he deserved a good send-off. He deserved the respect. He certainly earned it. And he deserved to be up there, with Hamilton and Vettel. I mean, the thing that amuses me about that dynamic is that I remember when Vettel was winning all his titles, Alonso and Hamilton were in unison saying, Vettel's not that good. We're the cream of the crop here. This guy's just got a great car. So to see all three of them being quite, harmonious was interesting. Vettel obviously hasn't won a championship since he left Red Bull, so there may be a point to their statement, but...
Well, it's been officially 5 years now since his last.
And he made a lot of mistakes this season. It's not been his best year, for sure, but it was a nice send-off, and with all the engine roars these days, it's hard to see the drivers. You don't often see the drivers let loose in their cars, so it's great to see a little bit of that. I remember the good old days where they used to, do donuts and wave flags and all those sort of fun things at the end of races, and it's all become rather sanitized, so it's great to see a little bit of that at the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, as a driver, you really just, you can't argue with Alonso. He was always, always, always there. He was always getting the maximum out of the car. There was never any question about that. What we're talking about is just the things that kept him from being not only one of the greats in terms of most people's eyes, but one of the greats in terms of the statistics, is that he, frankly, I think to put it bluntly, couldn't keep his mouth shut when he was out of the car. And, what an excellent, excellent time. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. No problem.
Cheers. I'll get this plate out of the way, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all set. Right, no, this is good. Thank you very much.
No problem. My name's Connor. If you need me.
Well, that's lovely. I love your pub.
Thank you.
Connor of Connor O'Neill's. We'll just make an assumption here.
I think it's not his real name, is it? I think he doesn't want to be known by his real name. And that was the first thing he thought of. So obviously Alonso left, but it's been a big turnover this season. So we've got five other drivers all leaving Formula One at the end of, at least temporarily, at the end of 2018. So we've got Stoffel Vandoorne,
Formula E.
We've got Sorokin, who
I think he's just out.
Yeah, he's going to go down as a footnote in Formula One. Brendan Hartley.
Yeah, you know, for a while I was sympathetic to him, not really giving a shake, but after a while I was like, okay, come on, man. He had enough time.
Yeah, I think so. Ericsson?
Ericsson, he's off to IndyCar.
And was soundly thrashed by his illustrious Leclerc teammate.
Now, since you said that, is it Leclerc or Leclerc? Because he's
French. You know, make it up how you want to.
So it's mostly...
He's from Monaco, isn't he? So he's almost French, but pretending not to be.
So I don't know, because I've heard several Englishmen call him Leclerc, but I could have sworn it's actually Leclerc.
Well, go with yours.
There was a guy. His name was spelled Gillette, just like the razors. And he was
quite sharp.
He was Westbury Gillett. And I was like, Gillett, really? Are you sure? And now he was English, but yeah. Anyway, side note, whatever. And then so that was Marcus Ericsson, and
yep.
then
Ocon.
Yeah, to become a reserve driver.
Yeah. So
and he's the one that's staying closest.
But I can't remember such a high turnover, because a couple of those drivers, I mean. Certainly, I think you'd say Ocon was unlucky not to get a drive, right? And, you know, I'm not a huge Ericsson, Hartley, or Sorokin fan, but
I know
Stoffel,
you had a soft replacement
for
Stoffel.
Yeah, I quite like Stoffel. I think it was partly driven by watching the McLaren bio, and he came across as a really nice guy, and, you know, he has been up against a Formula One legend, so it's not been an easy battle for him. So a bit disappointing there, but yeah, it's a lot of turnover. But the good news is we've got some exciting drivers coming into the sport.
I'm very happy to see George Russell come
in. Formula 2 champion.
Formula 2 champion.
Big upgrade for Williams.
We're going to talk about Williams in a minute, and Lando Norris as well. That'll be a good one. Leclerc in the Ferrari is going to be very exciting. And there's a lot of, in addition to that, the new drivers, there's also a lot of drivers moving around that'll be interesting. But who are the other new ones?
So we've got, obviously, Kubica is being compared
to Williams. Yes, Kubica coming back, yes.
And then this guy, Albon, who is...
That's the one I didn't know about.
From Thailand, right? But born in London.
Born in London.
I think he's from Thailand.
Okay, and which team is he going to be?
He is going to be in... STR, Scuderia Toro Rosso.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So, it being Scuderia, then I'm going to guess that he is 14 years old. Is he 14? Or is he 14 and a half? Is he this many? Does he actually say the number yet?
Well, I think he's got that role because the Red Bull driver ladder just seemed to dry up. They stopped signing drivers at some point about 4 or 5 years ago. And all the 14-year-olds got promoted, and now they've suddenly got a dearth of drivers, which is how Hartley had a drive, and they're bringing back our Russian friend, whose name escapes me. Who's the Russian who's coming back in STR, who was dumped by Red Bull?
Oh, 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 God. Oh, yeah, okay, I know you.
So he was STR, then Red Bull, then
the one that Vettel always kept clashing with.
Yeah. We'll look him up, folks, and we'll get back to you. But you've probably already said his name. But he's back in the sport as well. So it's an all-new STR lineup, just as it is Williams' lineup. STR using Honda, of course, next season again for a second year, as well as Red Bull, the sister team. There were a lot of feistiness coming out from Red Bull, saying that Honda looked like it was definitely a better performing power unit than the
Daniel Kvyat.
Kvyat, there we go.
Yeah, that's right. He's coming back. That's right. I read about that and I completely forgot.
So I'm not too excited about his return, but the other drivers all seem good. As you said, Lando Norris, George Russell, Albon, all guys who.
Now, what's Albon's experience? He's the one I don't know about.
So I think he won a number of races in F2. I think he ran Russell quite.
So he was a strong.
Yeah.
Because Lando was F2, and I thought he ended up being second.
So all three of them had good seasons in F2, basically. I think Russell ended up winning the most number of races and won it quite easily in the end. But certainly Norris and Albon were in it at different phases of the season.
Got it. Yeah, it's. I'm excited to see that, and I'm excited to see. Well, I don't know if actually excitement's the right word for it. I'm nervous to see what happens with Force India.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now that it becomes...
That exciting new driver they've
Now tried. It becomes Lance Stroll of Force India.
Stroll and Perez. What a lineup that is.
It's going to be something.
Two daddy's boys from rich parents. Neither of them are that quick.
I don't think... Sergio is a daddy's boy, but he got tied to Carlos Slim early on.
Okay.
But Carlos Slim isn't his father.
No, but he's got...
But he's got Telmex money.
Big backing.
Yeah, no, Sergio was backed by Telmex when I raced against him and beat him, which I mention every time I say
there
that.
There we go.
I was 24 when he was 14, but we don't need to discuss that part too much.
Was it in a racing environment that you beat him, or was it dominoes or something?
Well, I beat him at a drinking game because I could get into the bar, but I also beat him in a racing car. It was Skip Barber National Championship. It was Formula Dodge National Championship. Skip Barber.
There we go.
And he definitely showed more potential than me because he was 10 years younger than me. But yeah.
No, but that's something to have on your resume for sure.
Oh, long listeners of the podcast know I bring it up every single time it comes
there
up.
There we go. It must have escaped my memory. So, moving swiftly on. Yeah, I mean, it's not the most of exciting of lineups for me. Because Stroll got out-qualified by Sorokin this year. And he was completely anonymous most of the season.
I think Stroll just had no motivation.
Yeah,
which is a shame because he should have lots of motivation.
Yeah, he should have. You look at someone like Alonso, who's double world champion, shit car, but yet, putting in the effort every weekend. You're in your second season of Formula One. You need to be pulling your finger out and showing what talent you have.
But let's be fair, Lance Stroll did beat Sergei Sorokin in the championship.
He did in the championship.
He was
right.
18th. Where Sorokin was 20th,
yep.
With 6 points to Sorokin's one.
Mm-hmm.
In between those two, by the way, was Brendan Hartley with 4.
No, they had a bad car, there's no doubt about it, but I would not be happy being out-qualified by my rookie teammate. That would not sit well with me.
But here's a fascinating stat for you. The bottom five in the championship were Stoffel Vandoorne, Marcus Ericsson, Lance Stroll, Brendan Hartley, Sergei Sorokin. 4 out of those 5 don't have drives.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
But money plays no role in Formula 1. We've said that from the beginning. We're standing by that. Money plays no role. Formula 1 is a gentleman's sport for the honor and nothing else.
But yeah, Force India, I don't think we'll be using that name much more, right? Because they're going to be consigned to the Formula 1 history books here shortly and will be replaced by Racing Point, which... It's going to be hard to remember. But that's the temporary name, apparently. They're going to change that again to something more memorable, like Canadian Racing or the Strolls, Stroll in the Park. But their loss, which is gaining Lance Stroll, is Williams' gain because they've managed to get rid of two fairly average drivers, I have to say, and they brought, you know, Kubica may not be the guy who won the Canadian Grand Prix back in 2008, but he is a very smart, very good developer of cars, and I think he'll be able to work with the Williams engineers and get that thing moving in the right direction.
And then he will be motivated.
And I'm sure he'll be plenty quick enough as well.
And I remember Kubica was the guy when he was in Formula One before he left first time around, that lost 7 pounds of muscle to be better weighted for the Formula One car. To me, that is real commitment. And I think he's the type of guy that is committed, dedicated, and has the core talent that he can bring about, and the right amount of aggression to really bring to the sport when it matters. Williams so desperately needs.
And
I'm so excited for that.
Some experience, right? Some guy who knows how it's supposed to be done, how Formula One team operates, how to really work with the engineering team. That's what you need. And then you put a good young rookie in the mix. That's the right driver lineup for Williams. Stop taking the money, put the right drivers in the car, go back to basics, get back at least in the midfield. Stop scraping around at the back of the grid where you do not belong.
Exactly right. Hear, hear to that. So,
And then of course Ferrari's lineup looks pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Got rid of the old geezer.
Leclerc, the English driver. There was this racing documentary called "Racing to Immortality," I believe it is, and it's a Ferrari documentary of the '50s era Formula One racing, and it largely covered. Of course, the names are going to leave me now. But English drivers that raced Ferrari. Mike Hawthorne. Yep. And
I think the podcast and our ability to remember facets of Formula One history throughout the decades has probably been not improved by drinking during the podcast.
We have that lovely excuse for us, which is really nice.
The tinkling you can hear is Robin's second GMT, and it appears to have impeded his ability to remember anything.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've forgotten even having that second GMT. So let's not worry about it.
So Merry Christmas, listeners. Let's hope you...
Peter Collins.
Yeah. Mon Ami Mate was a classic... book about their relationship, Collins and Hawthorne.
Yeah, they were very close. But anyway, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari to really put Vettel's toes to the fire.
No, I'm going to say that he'll outscore next season. Vettel, I reckon he'll do a Daniel Ric on him, and he'll outperform him. He won't win the championship. He'll come second to Lewis. There's my prediction for next
year. Wow, well, that is a bold. That is the second Guinness talking to a certain extent, I think.
Yeah.
I think that Vettel will up his game because he will absolutely have to. And
will his toys be thrown out of the Prem again like he did in Red Bull?
Because, but where would he go? I mean, Ferrari, he wanted to be the second coming to Michael Schumacher. And there's nowhere for him to go. And I think that his mindset was already shifting away when Daniel Ricciardo was there, but I think Vettel will really dig in this time around. And one of the reasons why he liked Raikkonen as a driver is because Raikkonen said, "I'm old, I'm rich, you do whatever you want, just keep the paychecks coming, and I'll keep driving the car how you want me to." And Raikkonen was not as consistently quick as Vettel. He is the best driver in the world ever to exist, but he didn't have the appetite to deal with the politics of it. So Leclerc, young, hungry, and will absolutely push Vettel. So I think that Vettel could be one of two scenarios. I think Vettel could be really quick again, or he's starting his slow decline. It's one of those two.
He could go to Haas.
I mean, honestly, though, let's if you think Leclerc will, you know, handily outqualify Vettel, where does Vettel go? Vettel's paycheck cannot be small.
I mean, you know, it might be quick in it might be closely matched in qualifying, but let's be honest. I mean, Vettel's racecraft this season was found wanting, wasn't it? I mean, the number of on-track incidents with different drivers where he ended up coming off the loser, spinning away, losing places. I mean, he was just a disaster. That middle portion of the season after Belgium, just horrible. Horrible series of races for him. And, I mean, there was a fascinating moment where, you know, Leclerc wasn't far behind him in, was it, Brazil?
Yeah.
They were sixth and seventh, right?
Yeah. I mean, and that's Leclerc in the Sauber.
Yeah, exactly. So that guy's coming. He's got his dream seat. He's already been out in the Ferrari in the postseason test. He was quick. Yeah, he's got a whole preseason to get comfortable. He is going to make Vettel very uncomfortable, and you know, that's, you know, it could either, as you're saying, push him to greater heights where they can finally maybe take on Hamilton and beat him, or it could go the other way very quickly. It could unravel. So
your top five drivers this season:
Hamilton, Verstappen.
Okay, all right, great, all right.
Well, no, I mean,
disagree with you more than I thought I would.
No, I mean, Hamilton definitely number
yeah,
one. Verstappen clearly two. Clearly number two. And
okay.
Then I think after that, you probably, certainly if you got a long memory and you think about the start of the season, I think you have to say Daniel Ricciardo. Because, I mean, he had a horrible period of retirement, so just killed his season.
Awful
right?
DNFs, yeah.
But, I mean, his win in China was one of the greats of recent memory. I mean, that was a splendid victory. Then I'd probably go Vettel.
Okay.
I'm just picking from the top three teams, aren't I? So you have to put, Leclerc.
Okay.
There you go.
So I agree with you. Hamilton number one.
Yeah.
I'm putting Fernando Alonso number two.
Well, that's brave.
He so consistently drove that car to its absolute limits of capability everywhere. I think, despite his dogged attitude about it, I think Alonso was brilliant.
Okay.
I'm going to put Ricciardo ahead of Verstappen.
Ooh.
Only because Verstappen's second half of the season was darn good, but his first half was only so-so, and he still showed, in my mind, pretty big moments of immaturity.
He's not the finished article, but his second half was pretty splendid.
Verstappen, absolutely, is still in the top five, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my number five, although it's fair, Leclerc was quite good, but I actually thought Pierre Gasly showed some real strong performances given the car he was in.
No, fair enough.
All right, your bottom five.
Stroll, Sorokin, Hartley, Ericsson, Stroll again.
Where we largely agree there. I don't think that Stroll showed us anything. I thought Sorokin was. It was proven time and time again that Sorokin was a mistake. Ericsson, he had his moments, but they just wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
And, you know,
you'll have to put
I don't
Stoffel
know, man.
In there, I'm afraid.
Stoffel
21-0,
is, yeah.
21-0, yeah.
Exactly. Stoffel is kind of in that on my list as well.
Yeah.
And he's not on my list. I'm not trying to, but Carlos Sainz, I'm disappointed. I'm frustrated because he could have been
controversial.
He could have been a top five guy, I think, but he just didn't seem to have. He didn't seem to have what really needed to be there.
Yeah, I think.
I
don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think there were weekends where he blew Hülkenberg away. There's not many teammates who have done that to Hülkenberg. And
you
that's his first season in a Renault. So Hülkenberg's, you know, happy camper, right? Very familiar with the team, firmly established. And Sainz comes in and takes him on. I think that's harsh, to be fair.
Those are fair points. But I'll tell you who's my number five bottom driver.
Okay.
Romain Grosjean. He had so many.
Oh yeah, he had a rough period.
So many heart attack moments that it's like, okay, one or two, feel bad for the guy. But once you get up to five or six...
I'll tell you what, Magnussen is a real sleeper, isn't he? I mean, that guy...
He's hot and cold.
When did he finish in the Drivers' Championship? He scored some serious points, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he was consistent.
He was quite strong.
I mean, unfortunately...
He ended up ninth with 56 points.
Yeah, I mean, he gets no TV coverage. Right, he doesn't really do anything to really light up.
Compared to Romain, 14th with 37.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't do anything to sort of get any of the TV directors' interest. But he just keeps scoring, and he's a safe pair of hands. And he had a good, solid season, and he put Grosjean in the shade. And Grosjean's quick. Grosjean has been quick in his,
When Grosjean is on, he's good.
He's fast. Yeah. So that was a decent season by Magnussen, who, Good for him. I mean, Haas very close to getting fourth place in the championship. They've beaten a lot of big teams this year, right? They've beaten the McLaren Williamses. They're still a small team. Obviously, get a lot of support from Ferrari, but they're doing a hell of a job, really, with what they got. So good for them.
Well, it's just been a crazy season. I want to take a moment and sincerely thank you, sir, for joining me on this. It's been a lot of fun. I feel like I've learned a little bit more about the United Kingdom thanks to you, and I have certainly enjoyed poking fun at it here and there with your permission. So thank you very much, and I thank everyone for sticking with us. It's been completely my fault that it's been haphazard with timing and
Tony
all this kind of
fault.
It is completely my fault. And so I want to thank everyone that stuck with me, the listening, crazy schedules here. I try to share so that you guys know why I have a crazy schedule, but that doesn't take away from it. So thank you very, very much for a wonderful season. And I want to thank you for listening. Please do take a moment to review us on iTunes or on whatever platform you get our podcast. Please leave comments on the episode of your choice by going to funwithcars.com. As always, I can be reached at feedback@funwithcars.com. Tweet us at fun_with_cars. And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/FWCars. Chris, one more.
Cheers, Robin.
Cheers.
Happy New Year.
I'm Robin Warner. Goodbye.
Good?
Yeah.